Welcome to season 4 of the Brave Writer podcast, A Brave Writer's Life in Brief. I'm Julie Bogart, your host. This season, we are releasing via audio our most popular YouTube broadcasts. We're so excited that you can now listen to these on audio while you're running, driving in the car, or folding laundry. We will also sprinkle throughout this season original content, interviews with people I think are compelling to listen to. If you get a chance, please help us out by leaving a review at iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to Brave Writers podcast. We really appreciate it. It helps us get the word out, and it also gratifies all the people behind the scenes who work so hard to bring these to you for free. And now, let's get going with this episode. So today, I thought that we would discuss what to do with the problem of what if. I get emails and phone calls all the time from homeschool parents just like you, who were just like me. Let's be clear. I was exactly like you. The only difference between me and you now is my journey is over. I can't fix anything. Whatever went wrong forever. You are still in the trenches. You can adapt. You can adjust. You can try to bring some freshness and some life to places that right now feel puzzling and challenging. That said, there will be a day when your journey is over too. And you might even look back already at a child who's reading and you think, oh, what if I had taught them to read this way? What if I had used this other philosophy from the beginning and didn't switch in the middle? What if my child were in school? Would they be getting more of what they need than what I can give them? I don't know about you, but I can torment myself with the what ifs. I can continually reevaluate, even in the middle of something that's working, and wonder, but isn't there a tweak? Isn't there one better way to implement it? Let me give you a small example of exactly how this works. Imagine right now that you are living in a house that is not your dream home. Is that pretty much everyone who homeschools? It certainly was for me. We had no money. We lived in a shoebox when we lived in California. It was a condo that we were renting. I had very little power over that space. And I would go to my friends' homes who had actual backyards, big houses, and I would wonder, what if I had a better house? Would that make my homeschooling better? So even something as small as a house, and today you've all got Instagram and Facebook, you're actually seeing inside the houses of all your homeschooling friends. Woo, that can be challenging. Some of these houses are spectacular. And all I can think when I see them is, oh, good grief. I am so glad I didn't know those homes existed when I was tucked into a shoebox in California with my 5 kids in 3 bedrooms, and there was no yard, and we all lived cramped in this one little space. Our table barely fit to have all 7 people sit around it for dinner because it was such a small space. So sometimes the what ifs grab you in the most unlikely space. It's not always around curriculum. Sometimes it's, I wish I had her husband. Sometimes it's, I wish I was as healthy and fit. Sometimes it's, I would be a better home educator if I was just more organized. I remember my sister, she says one of the greatest phrases ever. I've thought of it so many times. She says, I have the wrong personality for my temperament. Now, let me unpack that for you, but I just love it so much. I have the wrong personality for my temperament. So she says her temperament needs order, clear counters and spaces, a system, a routine, but her personality is naturally disorganized. Like that doesn't come to her naturally. So what she feels like she needs to have well-being is counteracted by her personality. Have you ever had that feeling? Like what I really need right now is this, but I am just not the person to make that happen. I really need a good budget, but I'm terrible with numbers. Do you ever feel that? That's the what if coming into your life. That is you battling yourself, not trusting who you are to be adequate. You're looking around the corner and you're saying, what if I had been born with this other personality? What if I had been born with these better skills? What if my mother had trained me in the domestic arts? Or what if my father had shown me how to manage you know, the cars and all of the technical things I need? What if I'd married better and I wasn't divorced? What if I had children that didn't have special needs? What if my oldest child was the academic one to set a good example instead of this chaotic ADHD kid I have as my first child? Hello, my life, right? These are the things we torment ourselves with. This is what we do when we're not paying attention to the good that is coming from our natural skill set, that is coming from our dedication already to this task. So what I want to look at today is a little bit of this what-ifing, how much it ruins the good that we have the opportunity to create in our homes. It's so common to use the what-if as a torpedo. It literally de-energizes us. It leaves us without the momentum we need to do the things we're actually good at. Have you ever noticed that? And for me, maybe this is true for you too, it comes out of the blue. Usually I'll be having like this great week. Things will actually be going fine. And that's when the what if comes. It's not like it comes when I'm in the depths of despair. Usually when I'm in the depths of despair, I'm so low, I can't think about what if. I'm just like, how do I crawl out of this muddy hole? But when I'm sailing along well, it's like I start hunting for the thing that's not going right. I start thinking, what if this isn't it? What if I'm not doing enough of it, better of it, more of it? One of the most common what ifs for me was, what if I had started this home education philosophy sooner? So I would find out about something that was really attractive, but unfortunately, my children were already growing up. They were already, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. And I think, shoot, I should have known about how to teach reading in this perfect way when my 10-year-old was 5. Do you know what I'm talking about? What if my kids would know how to read if they had gone to school? What if I had figured out my homeschool style sooner? What if I was classical instead of relaxed? Who? What if my kids are at a disadvantage for math and science, for STEM, because they had me and their dad as their parents, 2 literature buffs, 2 writing instructors. What if I am doing isn't going to help her get into veterinarian school? She's got this sacred dream, and you feel like it's yours to carry on your back to get her there. What if I've not given them enough social time? Yes, let's be honest about that. We all deny the charge that homeschooling is not good for socialization, but secretly, we want our kids to fit in eventually, to make friends, to not be socially awkward at a party. What if my daughter wanted to read independently for enjoyment? What if my kids are not good enough at scheduling or having good habits because I don't have them? I mean, aren't they needed for adulthood? I mean, I know I don't have them and I'm getting by, but what about my kids? The world won't be so kind to them. They better be better at housekeeping than I've been. What if I made the wrong decision and my son would actually thrive at school? What if I'm holding him back? What if I did the wrong thing and they would have done better? And you know what? That's the bottom line, isn't it? The core understanding of what if is this. What if I'm just failing? What if in every arena, when I look, there was a better way? What if when I just pause and really think about it, I realize I'm limited? The what if implies that there is a better version of you somewhere else that you can go rope in and take on and become that superpower that you want to be. Does that make sense? You are imagining that another version of you exists somewhere else. And if you could just find it and then inhabit it, problems would go away. Your children would learn. You would be happy. There'd be peace and progress that you could measure. All right, so let's talk about some of these hard ones. What if my kids regret that they were homeschooled? Doesn't that just make you want to cry? You dedicate your life to this amazing task and your kids say, I wish I'd gone to school. All right, now let's all take a collective deep breath and a sip of tea. Ready? Tea. I'm here to burst your bubble. There will be some of your children who will wish that they had gone to school. Let me ask you, Is there anything your parent did that you wish they had done differently? How many of you are homeschooling your kids right now because you went to public school, the choice your parents made, and you didn't like it? How many of you know that's why some of your parents don't support your homeschooling choice? Because they feel personally invalidated. They feel sad. They think, oh, she's picking homeschool because she's dissatisfied with what I chose for her. You get to make choices for your children that they are going to wish you had not chosen. That's going to be true down to what school district, if you put them in school, or what you did when you homeschooled. It's going to happen whether they liked living in California or Ohio. They don't have the power. You have the power. So there will absolutely be things that when they look back, they're going to see differently than how you saw it. Plus, times will change. Opportunities will change. They will have their own bright, shiny vision of what they think will guarantee happiness for them in their lives and their families. So how do we make peace with this? How do we make peace if the thing we're doing has no guaranteed outcome, is contingent on how our kids feel about it or turn out? I mean, that's a problem. If our sense of well-being is located in another person, you're going to feel loco. I mean, I do. Whenever I get my focus on how somebody else is behaving in reaction to me, I become a not healthy person instantly. Because what goes on for me is that I start to find myself wanting to control what I don't have the right to control. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't have the right to control how my children feel about what I offer them. I can offer them connection. I can offer them my best efforts. I can offer them my honesty. Hey, here's how it is. Here's what I'm thinking about. Here's my vision. Here's my imagination on your behalf. But you cannot control what the other person does with that. We bring up this best that we have to offer, you know, the best meal we've ever made. And there will be some people who are like, I don't like grilled salmon. Even if it's the best salmon you've ever made. Doesn't mean it wasn't a nutritious meal. Doesn't mean it wasn't the best meal for that occasion. It just means that someone is not you in that equation. And that person has a right, an obligation actually, to tell the truth of their own experience about what they're going through. So do you make the salmon? I mean, it's silly to go back to food, but I feel like as mothers, we're so much more willing to sort of address the ongoing process of learning about cooking and providing nutritious meals and figuring out allergies and reactions to certain red dye number two and, you know, gluten. We know that that's a never-ending journey, right? Like, is there anyone who really expects to like fix food? Because you have to do it 3 times a day. You have to shop all the time. The information you're getting is constantly changing. Even the nutritional information we rely on is changing every day. So if you think about how you manage your family around food, I think you'll start to get a better feel for how to manage them around homeschool. You've chosen this pattern. You know, when let's back up on the food thing just for a minute, because I want to drive the point home. You get married. And if you are still living under the traditional gender roles, which maybe some of you aren't because you're so much younger than me, but when I got married, pretty much most of my friends did the cooking and most of the husbands didn't. What was new in my generation is husbands cleaned up. They actually washed dishes and shopped for food. That was like the big breakthrough in my age group, it seemed like. We still made the food. And so what I used to think was incredible is that these men would fall in love with women and they were going to eat whatever that woman made, right? Like their whole diet now was going to be controlled by whatever that woman liked or didn't like. If she didn't like bell peppers, there weren't going to be bell peppers in their meals. If she was into health food, there was going to be health food. If she wasn't into health food, there was going to be junk food. It's like the family is controlled. Their eating is controlled by the vision of the primary food preparer. So if that's your husband, then you are subject to whatever he makes, right? Isn't that true? And we start to adapt to it. And we have genuine reactions. We say things like, wow, I hate bell peppers. Mom, when you make a meal that has that, can I eat something else? Do we take that as an invalidation of all of the love we have for our children? Or do we just say, oh yeah, well, bell peppers isn't their favorite thing. It's a good food. It's just not for him. I'll go ahead and make him something else, or I'll give him some ingredients to work with on his own. But I still figure he's getting nourished. It's just not on my terms every meal of every day.
You're listening to the Brave Writer Podcast. Today, I want to tell you about Instagram. It turns out Instagram is my favorite social media playground. I love to share photos of my family, inspirational photos about homeschooling and writing, and sometimes I even share your photos with our community. My goal for my Instagram account is to provide you with inspiration, a belief that you will get there someday, that you're doing the right things to bring about a quality education for your family. And I also like to share writing advice. If you are looking for a place where you can hang out and experience a lot of support, join me at Julie Brave Writer. That's my account, at Julie Brave Writer. I also like to share photos from your poetry tea times at my other Instagram account, at Poetry Tea Time. Please come follow along. If you want me to see what you're sharing on Instagram, use the hashtag Brave Writer Lifestyle, or simply tag me in your photos. I love to comment, send hearts, smiley faces, the whole nine yards. So let's get this thing going. And now let's return to today's podcast.
So now let's pivot. Let's look at homeschooling. Here's how I think the cycle of what if breaks down in your life. Okay. So here's what usually is going along. You're going along pretty well. Everybody's doing their thing. But one child has a moment where they're not happy, or they're reacting poorly, or they're going through a thing. You know, they hate reading, or suddenly they're sick of handwriting, or they just start to pitch a little bit of a fit. And so you go on a curiosity search. You're like, well, I could make life better for that kid. So you start looking. You scroll through Facebook and Instagram. You join your discussion group and ask a question. You find out what other people are using. And suddenly you are inundated with an array of options. And today on the internet, holy smokes. I mean, I used to only have to deal with like 10 or 15 options of my local support group. You guys have to deal with hundreds. And these are rabidly enthusiastic supporters and promoters of philosophies and programs. It's a lot to digest. But you finally get a little bit of a thrill in that journey. Why? Because your brain is being activated. The learner in you is growing. You are becoming a more well-educated home educator just by reading all that discussion, which is so fun, so exciting. You get to participate in adult-level learning about learning. And that means that you become excited about whatever program you pick at that point, philosophy program, activity, field trip, whatever. You get excited about it. So then you know what you do? You make the purchase, or you adopt the philosophy, or you decide to try the idea. And during that period, that's the yay, new program period. It's so much fun. You're so excited to foist it on your kids, to participate in it. It could even be something as lovely as poetry tea time, right? Which is so obvious and pretty much universally loved. And it'll go on for a little bit of time while you have that new energy and your kids do. You will find that it satisfies on some level the itch that you had, until the second step. So the first step is, yay, new program. The second step in the cycle is, it's working. But then you hit challenge. And that's the third part of the cycle. Suddenly, somebody stumbles. It's not quite as fun. There's a part of it you didn't anticipate. Even a good program has things you couldn't anticipate. You might get into the beginning of the math program and or the grammar program, and you suddenly are up over your ears. You don't know how to make fractions have common denominators anymore. You don't remember how to diagram a sentence. And it suddenly feels a little opaque and hard. And so this little doubt comes in. Well, maybe I picked the wrong one. I mean, I had a choice of 15 and maybe this really wasn't the best one. So the seed of doubt is sown. So first, yay, new program. Second, oh, it seems to be working. Three, uh-oh, right? Is that what happens? One child balks, they wake up because they didn't sleep well, they had pinworms, whatever. And you think it's the program. So if you allow that seed to grow, and that's always what we do, you start to move into what I call it must be me despair. Instead of just problem solving around whatever that issue is in that moment, we tend to think, uh-oh, it's me. Either I picked the wrong program, I'm not good enough at it to teach it adequately, I'm not good at this subject, so now that's showing up. I'm not a good enough mother. I don't have a nice enough house. We use the wrong paper. I need better teacups. I mean, I don't know. There is this moment where we move from challenge to it's me despair. Now, challenge in itself is not a problem. It's totally fine to have the new program that's working and you hit a challenge. You should hit a challenge. Challenge is just part of life. It's okay to problem solve the challenge. And when you problem solve the challenge, you have such a great life. Life gets better so much more quickly. But that isn't what a lot of us do. What a lot of us do is we move into, I thought it was supposed to be perfect. Uh-oh, there's a challenge. It must be me despair. That's what I would call it. It's the it must be me despair syndrome. And that's when we enter into what if, fill in the blank. And it prompts another search for that magic puzzle piece that's missing from our homes and homeschool. And that makes us go through the whole cycle from scratch again. Do you know what happens if you live in the what if cycle? You never land. You feel anxious and upset and you take it out on your little people. You know why? Because they're not living up to your expectations that will make you feel like a good homeschooler. They are actually internalizing all that anxiety you're projecting on them. They are now carrying your fear that they're not going to have a successful homeschool experience. And that's one of the reasons they won't want to homeschool their kids. They won't be able to identify it. But what they'll know is they felt anxious and tense during homeschool. And they don't want to have that feeling. And they're going to fantasize that if they had gone to school, they won't have that feeling. They're going to carry your anxiety for you. We don't want them to do that. So do we want to break this cycle? I think we do. So here we go. We're going to break the cycle. I made a list. There are five things to help you. Okay, you ready? Expect new to come with unforeseen challenges. So let's say you set up a tea time and you've got all the old coffee mugs and a bunch of old books and an old tablecloth and your kids just seem unenchanted. You actually could go shopping for new teacups and it might change everything. But that's problem solving for the challenge, not, oh my gosh, it must be me despair. What if, and you think you have to like build a gazebo in the backyard to get the magic to happen. Solve for the challenge. Don't direct the despair at yourself. Don't treat yourself like the problem. Treat the problem like the problem. Your poetry tea time didn't go well? Go find some ideas about how to make it better. Don't think to yourself, I'm just a scum. I'm terrible at magic. I don't know how to set a table. It's really hard to find cute teacups. Maybe that's the energy you brought to the table and your kids know it. Maybe if you just pulled out a book of stickers and stuck them all over the mugs, you'd save money, you'd use those stickers you never use, and that would magically change tea time. Solve the problem. Don't retroject despair on yourself and see yourself as the problem. Do you see the difference? Number two, expect that you do have limits in your capacity to carry out anything you ever try. You are never going to get your house clean enough. You're never going to use the math book thoroughly enough. You're never going to understand grammar well enough. You're never going to do science to a high enough degree of accuracy and curiosity. Like, just admit it. You know, it was really liberating for me when I realized I didn't know how to do kitchen chemistry experiments. I made note cards. I had the list of all the ingredients. I even went shopping for them and then finally realized I don't even know what these words mean. It is not my strength. We cannot do it. They will have to get science in high school with somebody else. So we just focused on all the things I loved about science. You know, weather, astronomy, nature, birding, anything I could control, we did. And I left everything else alone because I figured, when are they going to need it? And in our case, because of family culture, you know, none of them went into scientific fields. How surprising is that? So expect that you have limits in your ability to carry out the thing that lives right now as a fantasy in your imagination. Give it your best shot. Pat yourself on the back for giving it your best shot. Problem solve. The problem's not the person. Lastly, stick with it. You know, we never give anything enough of a try when we hit the wall of challenge. So I like to suggest this. You know, we have on the blog, and I'll share that link or you can just search for it. Go to blog.bravewriter.com and look up One Thing Principle. Follow our One Thing Principle, where you move through a one thing at a time process. Don't try and bring in three plates to spin at once. Spin one at a time. Get one really going before you bring in the next one. You can do that with any subject. Pick a time frame to test it. So you get the new math book. Explain to your kids why you think this is a great program. You just talked about it for an hour with all these people online for the last, you know, hours and hours for the last several weeks. And you hope they like it. So you made brownies. And then you start paging through the book. You look for the most interesting page and you start there. Why would you start on page one? That's so overwhelming. You've got 200 pages in front of you. Like, let's just see what it's about, right? So jump in to the thing and say to yourself and your kids, if you need to, we're going to try this for 6 weeks or 3 months or 6 months and see how it turns out. And I'm going to ask you, you know, every couple of weeks, what do you think? How's it going? Do we like this? Is there a way to tweak it and make it better? Stick with it. Don't abandon ship just because a storm came up. Ride through the storm. Solve the problem. Don't solve the people. Once you get to that endpoint, 3 months, 6 months, evaluate. That's point four. Evaluate. Did we like it? Did this enrich us? Was this helpful? Now, you actually don't need to evaluate, probably, if everything just seems to be humming along. Do not toss a homemade hand grenade into the living room of happiness. Don't tweak things that are working, okay? Just promise me you won't do that. And then finally, only switch if the thing you're doing is failing people. And here's how you know if it's failing people. You're miserable and you don't see progress. It's okay to abandon something because it produces misery. In fact, please do. Okay? Misery is horrible for life and homeschool and family dynamics. Misery is awful. Get rid of misery. Start with exploration, experimentation, testing things, giving it a college try, and focus on the process, not on the person. It's not personal. Just because Mequon math worked for me doesn't mean it will work for you. If you don't like it, it doesn't mean there's a flaw in you. It just means that's not the program for you and your kids. Make sense? Focus on problem solving, not on people denigrating, okay? And please don't do it to yourself. Pain means you've made a wrong choice in some method. So just figure out where the pain point is and try to speak to that. Now, the last thing to know is that if you spend a lot of time in what-ifing, you are robbing the moment. You are actually taking yourself out of the present. It's like an ejection button. You're just being ejected out of the present and into a fantasy where no problems live. All the people are perfect, you're perfect, and the program works. It doesn't exist, but that's what what-ifing does. You cannot change the past. Yesterday is totally irrevocably gone. So if you don't find out about the best program until your kids are 16, and it was the one you should have used for learning to read, oh well, welcome to the human race. You know, we didn't even have the internet when I started homeschooling. I had to do it without. I had very limited choices. Oh well. Sometimes I watch what you guys are doing on Instagram based on my suggestions, and I'm like, dude, I never thought to do that. I mean, I went to Colonial Williamsburg last year when I was speaking, and I actually wept tears because I had never taken my children there when they were homeschooled. I cried. I sent a message to all five of my kids saying, I'm so sorry I failed you. I'm a terrible mother. Why didn't we ever go there? How have you made it? You know, we missed U.S. government. I mean, we just didn't focus on that. And do you know what they wrote back to me? Mom, we could go now with you. Oh, sob. My 20s to 30-year-old kids are like, why would it matter when we went? If we want to see Colonial Williamsburg, shouldn't we just go now? How awesome is that? I'm reading a book right now called A Mind for Numbers by Barbara Oakley. And the whole time I'm thinking, why didn't I know this information when we were trying to teach math? Hello, all my kids are good at math. I guess I did okay, despite all of the crummy ways I felt about myself and math education. Are you hearing me? The what if syndrome lands you in no good space. It makes you hard on yourself, and you transfer that anxiety to your children, and then they carry it for you, which undermines everything good that you're doing. So let's not do that.
That's it for today. I hope you found some ideas you can implement even this week. I'd love to hear from you. Follow me on Instagram at Julie Brave Writer, or you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Brave Writer. In the meantime, live honestly, write bravely. I'm Julie Bogart from Brave Writer.